Welcome to the But Here We Go podcast, coming at you from But Here We Go Studios in Dallas, Texas. Do you know it's pretty hot out right now? We're not breaking any records yet, but I heard on the news, probably since the last time we podcasted, that there are wipers melting to windows.
I saw that too, but all I could ask was where? Like, where is this happening?
Yeah, I didn't ask any questions,
and
but
also,
I thought,
like, how cheap are these wipers? Like, what? It takes a lot for rubber to melt, does it not?
Oh, yeah.
Are tires melting into the ground?
I haven't heard any stories like that.
Right.
Yeah, so I was like, whoa, that is hot.
I will say, I was getting into the car earlier this week, and I had parked it for like an hour or two with like just full on sun. And I was wearing shorts, and it burned my leg when I sat on my leather seat. It was extremely painful.
I saw an article title that said, yada, 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 bakes cookies in car, and they were overdone. Now,
that just means that they left it in too
long. Yeah, I had to ask myself.
It's that hot.
I had to ask myself, does that mean they don't know how to bake cookies?
Yeah.
Or does that mean that it was baking so fast that they couldn't not overdo them?
In their defense, I have not checked, but I've not seen any like cookbooks for your car. So it's very well that it was just like a trial by error. What's it called? What am I trying to say?
You're trying to say
trial and error.
Trial and
there
error.
You go.
But that's a really good point that now, with climate change and with all of these super hot summers and whatever we're dealing with, somebody needs to come out with a cookbook for your car.
Well, it's funny. So there's something wrong with our hot water heater, and we're having someone come look at it tomorrow. But like a couple days ago, I realized like the water was being kind of weird, but I didn't think anything of it. And then I took a shower yesterday morning, and I was like, it's not getting hot. And it wasn't until then that I was like, wait a minute, maybe something's wrong with the hot water heater, because it was warm, it just wasn't hot. And what we've determined is that the reason why it is warm is because the hot water is being heated from all the heat being trapped in our attic.
Yeah,
and that's heating it, which a friend of ours pointed out to me on the internet is technically geothermal heat flow, is it not? Or is it get solar power? Solar power.
Solar heating.
Right. But like, which made me think, is there a way to use global warming to our advantage on top? Why are you laughing at me? I'm just saying, not like.
What is your thought?
Like, obviously, we want to like correct what we can correct. But can we use it to our advantage in the meantime?
I hear what you're saying.
Right. But
you're saying,
disagree.
You're saying take lemons, make lemonade. As it's getting hotter, we should be using that heat when we need it. And yes, I completely agree. There are solar thermal heating systems to make your hot water. And in the summertime, they usually overproduce, meaning they make your water too hot, which is fine. You just mix it more. And in the wintertime, usually they need a little bit of extra heating. So basically you can reduce your natural gas bill associated with hot water significantly. The problem with that is that those systems are vacuum tubes with water flowing through them. That would never last in a Texas hailstorm.
Oh, because who wants to put glass tubes on your roof?
People who want to use solar thermal heating. But
that just seems dumb.
Yeah, it doesn't.
It hails everywhere.
Not.
There's been a
in the Southwest.
In every single continental state.
Yes, but in the Southwest, it's very rare. So all that to say,
whatever, I think
if there was
in there.
If there was a way to do it, that'd be great. If it's the only hard part is that everything is engineered in such a way that things don't play nice together. Like if we had a way to just lay out a bunch of hose in our attic and use that as the hot water,
right?
That would be fantastic during the winter. And that, or not the winter, during the summer. In the winter, we would just need a way to send that through the hot water heater, or we would need to be able to like switch the machine.
Right. Like, what if we only use the hot water heater like,
during
the winter time, and during the summertime, we use the solar heated water?
Yeah. I mean, that.
I'm just saying, we got to get creative, y'all.
Yeah.
Because things look bad.
Let's just hook up a hose and just snake it around up in the attic.
Speaking of climate change, et cetera. So I literally, when was the last time we podcasted? Like over a month ago?
Over a month, yeah.
Okay. I have been, if I see an interesting article, I throw it into one of the notes on my phone so that I have it for podcasting. And I have like six that I have that actually were, some of them were on there for when we podcast last time. We just didn't get to it. So we got to get through all these so I can clear it up. But two of them are related. Number one, ad go away.
I've got one that I want to bring up.
Oh, I'm excited. Okay. This one you and I have already talked about because I thought it was hilarious. So funny that we can't not talk about it. But CNN travel reports, and this is back on June 30th, giant kites could pull cargo ships across the ocean and slash their carbon emissions, which instantly went viral because, yes, it is in fact describing
a sailboat.
Right. Or like, you know, 1800s maritime ships with sails.
So clever.
I mean, the picture of it looks like a parasail attached to it, but I just thought it was, I didn't even read the article because I just thought it was so funny. And I'm sure it will work, but like, I think it's funny that like we're going back to the past to correct things.
Yeah. It is interesting that maybe we have come a long ways with our sailing abilities, or maybe that parasail in some way is a better solution than just a regular sailboat.
Right, but it still only works with wind.
Works only with wind. And it must be something that if you read the article, maybe it says like, this will come out only when it's windy. And they'll use it like as a...
Right.
As a boost.
Right.
Almost.
But then also, I would venture to say, and please correct me if this cannot possibly correct, but do you think it's a fair argument that our ships, like modern ships, weigh way more than the ships back in the day because it's metal and steel and like just generally bigger?
I would think so.
So I would think you'd either need more sails or the sails are going to not pull you as fast. Yeah.
Yeah.
The math is
they would probably end up ripping or just not being all that useful.
What if it's like, you know, like a fancy REI nylon or whatever?
Yeah. Yeah, because...
But then that's pollution when it falls into the ocean.
Yeah. And when I think of sailboats today, I feel like...
What are their sails made out of? Do you know?
I don't know what the sails are made out of, but I feel like the boats themselves are very, very high tech. Like the ones that can go fast are all carbon fiber.
Oh, right. They're light.
Super aerodynamic.
Right.
And engineered as high of engineering as you get. As high of engineering as things like Formula One race cars.
Right.
So.
But are we doing that the same with our shipping boats? Because I can think of is like, what's the Ever Given? What was it called?
I thought it was the Ever Source or Ever Given.
The Ever...
Green Ever or something.
Something or whatever. That thing was massive. It was a barge. That thing ain't going fast anywhere.
Yeah, especially when it gets stuck.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't
Ever
think,
Given.
I think it was the Ever Given.
Terrible name.
Which I don't think that we are necessarily doing any high-end engineering to make large cargo ships more aerodynamic. If anything, we are trying to make sure that they are less sinkable because they've got so much stuff on them and they're moving so slowly.
Right. But at the end of the day, and we've talked about this before, like the real solution, and this is not like a Buy America thing, but the real problem is that It's not a problem. The obstacle to overcome is, because
hardest part to obey.
I'm not against globalization. I just want to say that right now. I'm not against globalization, but it presents a interesting challenge to reducing the carbon footprint because we are so interconnected and we import a lot of essential items. All countries do, right? Like, you can't just stop shipping things. We're not agrarian societies. We're not set up like that anymore. So it's we can't go back, obviously, because it's nice to be able to have avocados from Mexico or...
Love avocados.
You know, microchips from China. That's lovely. But how do you do it in a sustainable way? I don't know. This is why people get paid for it.
Amen.
But speaking of which, have you heard that Norway's new phosphate deposits are so massive that they could guarantee solar power and electric cars keep running for the next 50 years?
No, I've not heard about
that. And this was in Yahoo News.
Yahoo, getting that.
So apparently, it's spelled Norge. I want to say that cannot be right, because that's hilarious to me. Norge Mining?
I mean, it could be.
Norge Mining has discovered 77 billion tons of phosphate rock.
Now, when it says phosphate rock, does that just mean phosphate, or what are the critical minerals?
Let me give you the highlights, and then we'll dig into this one.
Okay.
The company's founder said it could satisfy global demand for fertilizer and EVs for 50 years. Russia is another leading producer of phosphate rock, but the war in Ukraine has disrupted trade. Okay. Huge phosphate rock deposits discovered in Norway could satisfy global demand. Norge Mining, which reportedly found the massive site in southwestern Norway in 2018, announced in May they sat on that information for 5 years. Announced in May that it had discovered 77 billion tons worth of the mineral, according to The Economist. Down to 400 meters, we established two world-class resources, which together allow a supply of raw materials for at least 50 years. Does that mean anything to you?
That sounds good.
Does that answer your questions?
Yeah. I don't know enough about the process to know what phosphate rock required, what part of the mineral or the electric vehicle making process that requires phosphates. So that's on me. But that's great. That sounds like...
That's exciting, right?
It's an exciting, large,
right,
new source of rock.
Right. It does kind of concern me that we are removing that rock from the earth.
Why?
Because, what is going to... one, could that cause earthquakes? And also just, displacing that 700 billion tons of rock? That's like moving a mountain.
Yeah, it is.
But
it's called... It's called mountaintop removal.
Right. So in that book, we've talked about it before. Last year, I read a book called Stewards of Eden, which was the sequel to Epic of Eden. And that's what really got me 100% supporting our little crunchiness.
Our little eco village.
Yeah, right. Because before, I was like, I get it and I love you and I trust you. And I'm just, I like doing nice things. But then I read that book and I was like, oh, no, this is a vocation. This is this is a calling. Anyway, it gave this, and I don't have the book in front of me. It was a year ago, but essentially it was somewhere in the Appalachians in America. They've done this mountaintop removal, and it has decimated the area in terms of completely polluted the local rivers and water supplies with highly toxic materials,
acid mine drainage.
Yes, thank you. Acid mine. All the fish are gone. They cannot survive in that water. The water supply, and it's Appalachia. Those are very poor people. They live off the land in a lot of ways. All that's gone. They can't survive in the land anymore. The animals are literally. Not Chernobyl, but the land will take generations to get back.
Correct.
And no one ever talks about it. But that's globally speaking in our backyard. And
yeah.
Companies are continuing to do this kind of thing.
Well, in America they don't. They don't allow that anymore.
But wasn't this recent?
Not really. I mean, recent in the past 100 years, yeah. But as far as mountaintop removal, like, that's not really allowed. There's still open pit mining, which takes a lot of effort.
Is that that giant mining pit in Stranger Things?
That's a quarry.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's kind of like open pit mining. Yeah. Okay. It's a big pit. Yeah.
It's a big pit.
So, yeah, they still do that. But most, and now in the U.S., this is something I'm learning a lot about. There is the National Environmental Policy Act.
When was that passed?
1970s or 1980s.
Oh, dang. So welcome.
Yeah. And what that boils down to, most people refer to it as NEPA.
Of course.
But what it boils down to is that any decision that the government makes in terms of, I think it's any decision that the government makes, they need to have a NEPA, they need to go through the NEPA process and decide, is this decision going to impact the environment? So anytime any type of drilling is occurring.
So do you have to do the NEPA or whatever with some of the projects that you're working on, or is that?
Any project that occurs on federal land, if you are asking.
What if it's private land that you don't have to do it?
If it's private land, I don't think it matters.
That's stupid.
But if you're asking to build a right of way or build a road or drill a well or even something like get a new timber, like logging right, or if you're looking for grazing allotments. So if you've got a herd of cattle that you want to rent out the land and have them feed on that land, every single one of those has to have every time you submit a permit for that or try and get that lease or approval to do whatever that process is or project is, if it is on government land, the government agency who would be granting you that process, that approval, then has to stop and say, is this approval, like what we've been asked for, is this going to impact the environment in a
way? Yeah. I mean, it doesn't help with the private land, but
no. There's a lot of public land out there.
Right, but there's also a lot of private land.
Yeah. Yeah, there is.
Are you ready for the next one that I was the most excited about? And granted, this came out June 28th.
Bring it on.
Okay. So imagine me. I'm on TikTok. Side note, I follow Hank Green on TikTok. Do you know who Hank Green is?
I've heard of him.
He's one of the Green Brothers. They're like one of the
founding members of the Green Party.
Right. No, they're like one of the first like people to be on YouTube, like when YouTube started. But one of them, and I want to say it's Hank, who I'm talking about, wrote a ton of young adult fiction novels, like A Fault in Your Stars, or whatever it's called. A bunch of really famous. A lot of them got turned into movies. Anyway, I follow him on TikTok. And one, he has cancer. So he's been going through his cancer treatment. Apparently he's fine, but he still has to go through chemo and stuff. Anyway, he is super science nerd. Like, he knows a bunch of random stuff. So around the same time that like the internet started prepping everyone, like, hey, like this UFO hearing's coming out, like whatever. We hadn't had the UFO briefing yet, but like it was all over TikTok. He popped up in my feed and he was like, no, 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 that's not the news. What you really need to be paying attention to is the astrophysicists. And I was like, what the heck is he talking about? And he was like, go follow all of these astrophysicists because they're all talking about something, a big announcement that's coming up. And I was like, okay, I trust Hank Green and I prefer to not think about aliens. So let me go track down the astrophysicist. Long story short, Hank Green was dead on, because days later, there was this massive announcement, to which now I'm going to read you the headline of, that doesn't sound interesting to anyone else, but I find it fascinating. scientists have finally heard the chorus of gravitational waves that ripple through the universe. Scientists have observed for the first time the faint ripples caused by the motion of black holes that are gently stretching and squeezing everything in the universe. They reported Wednesday that they were able to hear what are called low-frequency gravitational waves, changes in the fabric of the universe that are created by huge objects moving around and colliding in space. So,
we can hear gravity.
Well, we can hear it, but also gravity, like, it's like, I don't know why that, I think that's so cool, but it essentially is like, space is not nothingness. It's almost like it's like we found another dimension almost.
Yeah.
And we have proof of it.
Yeah.
The sky's the limit. What else could we possibly find? I guess aliens.
I think it, I know you've told me that before. So you told me when we first saw
it. Because I was so excited about it.
The more I think about it.
The less excited. Please tell me. You don't
not
my
the
bubble.
Less excited. The more I'm like, it is cool. And it is also, I think it is helpful to think about because, but I'm also like wondering because I hear the idea that we can hear gravity waves. And now I'm thinking like, oh yeah, of course, because that gravity is just like the Doppler effect where when an ambulance is coming towards you,
mm-hmm.
next time you hear an ambulance coming, it sounds kind of fast and high-pitched coming towards you.
Right.
And then it gets long and drawn out
once
it goes past you.
Right.
That's because the sound waves are shorter coming towards you and longer going away.
Right.
And to me, that the same Doppler effect could essentially create a change in noise due to gravity.
Right.
So like as the black holes are moving and forcing things to move, whatever non-noise there is, there becomes noise from that because the gravity is moving everything.
Right. And what I think is interesting, too, is that there is no noise in space.
Yeah.
Like, that is a, like, any, if you ask any, like, scientist about, like, famous space movies, that's the first thing that they say is Star Wars, you should not be able to hear any of, like, the laser guns or whatever in space.
Yeah.
No explosions.
Those make the coolest noises.
I know. But there's no sound in space. But now, this is the first sound we've ever heard in space.
Yeah.
So, like, what else is there to listen to? Right. Like, what could we pick up?
Could be out there.
Because, like, we've been, like, putting, this is kind of segueing into aliens, which I don't really know if I want to talk about. We can if you want. Like, we have been transmitting radio frequencies into space for, like, over 50 years to try to, like, make contact with somebody. And we've never.
Never have.
Right. We never have. And granted, it takes a while for. Well, then also, how do radio waves travel in space if there's no sound in space?
Because they're radio waves. They're not.
Do I not understand radio waves?
It's not that the.
I guess because you can't hear radio waves. But if. Shouldn't the same logic flow that if there's nothing for sound to travel, like, through, how do radio waves travel? Like, what are they traveling through?
So they just kind of travel through whatever.
Okay.
And what you're hearing is the conversion of the wave into sound. So it's sending out this wave.
Right.
When that hits the electronics, like your radio.
Right.
And that's when you're dialing your frequency to whatever radio station. That is, that frequency coming in through your radio is a special, like, amount of energy that is being converted into sound.
I don't get it. But I also, like, hear me say this. I'm speaking to you in a microphone right now, yes. Right? And you're speaking in your microphone, and we yes. have headphones on, and so I'm yes. listening to our voices magnified. I still, and don't even attempt to explain it to me. I've read up on it. Like, I don't even understand how phones work at this point. I don't understand how you can, like, essentially digitize voices. Like, I don't get it. I don't understand, like, especially, like, how old school telephones, like the first telephone. I don't understand how that worked, and we sounded remotely similar to, and not even remotely similar, we sound identical. It blows my mind. I don't know why the good Lord decided to make that really hard for me to understand, but kind of in the radio waves, like the wave being transmitted into sound, it is to me a miracle that we humans figure that out, truthfully.
Like, you wanna hear something even crazier?
Sure.
So basically anything that's a little squiggle can be converted into a sound. So that is essentially...
So my hair on the bottom of the bathtub could be transmitted into sound?
Yeah, it could be that. I don't know how exactly you do that. But what I'm... anything that's a squiggle. But... that means, and this was done a while ago, seismic waves.
You could hear seismic waves?
Earthquakes specifically. There was somebody who converted specific earthquakes
to music.
To music.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Can I, like, Google that and listen to it? I'll do it later, yeah, but that sounds fascinating.
You can do it as a fact check, and we can.
If you're listening to this segment, it has not been cut.
Yeah.
Or I got lazy and didn't listen to the entirety of this podcast. Either or.
But so basically, like, that was, I think it was an art project where they basically, like, turned something that was completely different into music just by taking it and digitizing it and putting it into, like, it is a terrible example or analogy, but they basically, like, took those squiggles and imported them in as a wave file and then played it.
It was a school project, you said?
It was some type of project. I don't remember.
Get it, little kids.
Yeah, it's crazy. But that's what we're doing with gravity too, right?
Which begs the question, can you surf these gravitational waves? Can you be a space surfer?
Isn't all surfing defying gravity?
It took everything in me not to break out into defying gravity for the musical Wicked. But that's copyright
infringement.
Okay, moving on to the fourth out of the five articles, which are, I mean, this is the problem, is that the internet is now just giving me science articles at this point. So we're really finding a niche audience here.
Here we go, science.
Surprise! Jupiter's ocean moon, Europa, may not have a fully formed core.
Surprise.
Which I include this in here, and I don't know if this is problematic. To me, as a non-scientist, it seems problematic that the core is not fully formed.
Were you expecting a fully formed core?
Is this not a surprise to you?
It makes me...
Here's the thing. Go ahead. I'm an idiot.
Now, it makes me think of... It makes me think of, like, any type of food item. Like, you get a chocolate ball and you bite into it for the first time and you're like...
And it's like a Cadbury
egg. You're like, wait a second. I was expecting a full, solid piece of chocolate and this is what I get.
This just says a fully formed core, because, like, I'm assuming the Earth has a fully formed core, right?
Yeah, I think it does.
Even though we have magma. I'm not saying a fully solid... Or is our core solid?
Our core... So there's an inner core
An outer core, the mantle, and the crust.
And then the crust. Look at me.
I did learn something in my college.
Yeah, I mean, we've got other breakdowns, but it's... Just but those are the basics.
Right.
And the inner core
is
solid. The outer core is liquid.
If the inner core... We're getting off topic, but this is how little I know about basic science things. Is the inner core like metal or something?
It's basically nickel and iron.
How do we know? This is our best guess, right? Tested hypotheses. Because we've never... Correct me if I'm wrong,
we've never been to the core. But the reason that we have the theory that it's metal is because we also have a magnetic field.
Mm.
The magnetic field is really only possible with a solid metallic core.
Right. Okay, well, the reason why I flagged this article is I was under the impression that Europa is one of the planet or the moons or whatever that has been tagged for possible, hey, maybe we could live there one day. Am I incorrect in that assumption?
I think you are somewhat correct. I think it is one of those that everybody...
We talk about Europa a lot.
It's one of those that people have been like, if we could go anywhere, this would be it. But do you remember we watched that movie a while ago?
The Europa Report?
We did watch the Europa Report, which was interesting. I think it was another one. It may have been about Io, but I thought it was also about Europa. But it was this crazy, like, B-rated sci-fi movie about turning humans into something that could inhabit these moons. And one of the moons, I don't remember which one, but it basically turned you into an alien. Is like what it took to make somebody who could live on one of these planets. So it's in the sense that it is like the closest we can get to being habitable. It is habitable, but in reality, what it would take for us to actually inhabit it seems inconceivable at this time. And I say inconceivable as opposed to impossible, because I feel like we continually disprove the idea of impossible.
So, wait, say that again?
I feel like we say something is impossible and then we go and do it. In general, as a human species.
Right. Like sink the Titanic.
Like sink the Titanic, yeah. Like, it's unsinkable.
I've learned from Leonardo DiCaprio that never to say something is impossible.
Yep.
Okay.
But, yeah, not having a solid core, you know, that could be problematic.
Why? Because it just doesn't give us a magnetic field.
Yeah, and the magnetic field is what keeps us safe from all that radiation coming out from the sun.
Because the magnetic field blocks the...
That part I don't know so much about. But yeah, that's the answer.
Okay, well, I became less interested in this article when I read the headline... Or not the headline, the byline. Is that what...
Ooh, let's hear the byline.
It just says, quote, "We found that Europa may have spent most of its life without a fully formed metallic core. That is, if such a core exists at all."
Okay,
so really, guys, they don't know a dang thing.
Okay,
thanks,
guys.
Space.com.
This is the thing about trying to do science on something that is light years away. You don't really have data, and everything is really just kind of... it's not guesswork, but it is. What is it? The best way to explain it is that it is numbers. It is philosophy with numbers added.
Right.
So it's like these people might as well be Socrates with a calculator.
Right.
Like that's
and what,
really what
is
I feel
this
like.
Form of science? Like what's the... It's not like...
astronomy.
But I mean,
astro.
This is based on data. They were talking about like the Galileo.
Astrophysics.
Like somehow that we sent off back in the day. Yeah. 1995 got. So like we're basing it on something. But yeah, there is. I guess I liken it to how what we think dinosaurs look like. Like the coloring and like a lot. Yeah. That's just all made up. That's just like.
Yeah.
I mean, like we may know if it has like a fin or like a horn, but like the coloring and stuff is completely made up, which is now that they're saying that they feel like a lot of those dinosaurs probably did have feathers.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've got some astrophysics friends.
Oh, I thought you were going to say astrophysics background. And I was like, news to me.
I like them. All of this is really
give
cool.
Us the dirty.
Really fun, exciting stuff. But I do have friends who have just like straight up said, listen, they've stopped going to school. Like they basically bailed on their higher education because they said this has no real value. Like there are so many more important things that I should be doing right now.
Wow.
As opposed to this.
Wow.
And I think there's a lot of interesting questions and answers that are being had.
Right. But I feel like a lot of scientists, you included, get into the sciences to quote-unquote like change the world or like to make a difference or
to answer those unanswerable questions. And
right.
I think that is really where a lot of astrophysics is trying to get to these big, huge questions.
Right.
That they
where think, did we come from?
Yeah, that they think have answers. Whereas like some people who are doing studies on the moon and Mars and things that are nearby, like those have real implications on understanding what's going on there, which could maybe help us understand Earth better or to Elon Musk's delight, understand how to make Mars
have a Tesla dealership.
Yeah, how to have a Tesla dealership. So there are those values for what I would call near terrestrial astrophysics and astronomy.
Well, otherwise, it's just pontificating.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's just pontification.
Before we do my last article, because it's kind of a downer, what did you want to talk about?
What did I want to talk
about? Yeah, you said you had something.
I had one, but...
Don't tell me you forgot.
No, I know exactly what it is, but I'm curious because why would we want to end on a downer?
So we should do the downer. Well, for how long have we been potting?
37 minutes.
Okay. I just don't know if it's worth it. It could be a whole episode.
Let's do
depends
your
on
downer.
Where. I mean, it honestly depends on how interested you are in the topic.
Let's hear it, and then we'll just decide.
Once again, I have not read anything about this article, so. I just saw the headline. Death toll from Kenyan doomsday cult crosses 300.
Wow.
Was that the downer shift you were expecting or no?
Wow. Kenya doomsday cult.
Right.
What is this?
Right. That's when I was like, there's a doomsday cult in Kenya?
And I guess they think it's doomsday?
The death toll from a Kenyan starvation cult crossed 300 on Tuesday after authorities exhumed more bodies in a forest in one of the worst cult-related tragedies in recent history. Which, truthfully, the fact that no one is talking about this when it's in, I guess what it depends on what they mean by recent history, but 300 people is a lot of people.
Yeah.
Okay, authorities say the dead were members of the Good News International Church led by Paul McKenzie, who was accused of is he alive? Who is accused of ordering his followers to starve themselves and their children to death so that they could go to heaven before the end of the world.
That's sad.
A total of 303 people have now died after 19 bodies were exhumed from mass graves. More than 600 people are still reported missing. Holy crap. Investigators last week expanded their search to cover a wider area in the region to try to account for more victims. Around 65 rescued followers of the self-styled pastor were charged with attempted suicide. Now they're going to put him in prison for attempted suicide on Monday after they refused to eat between June 6th and June 10th during their stay at a rescue center. What? Relatives of his followers say he then returned to the forest and moved forward his predicted end-of-the-world date from August to April 15th. Oh, wait, sorry, I skipped something. Interior minister expressed concern that some of McKinsey's rescued followers were refusing food. One of them had died. McKinsey handed himself over to police in April and was denied bail. He has not yet been required to enter a plea. He was arrested on suspicion of the murder of two children by starvation and suffocation earlier this year, but was subsequently freed. Come on, Kenya, dang. Anyway, so here's my first question. Why? But secondly, I've never understood the concept of, because most of these like cults is like, they're all like, the end of the world's coming, we're going to heaven, right? If the end of the world is coming and you believe that you're going to heaven, why not just ride it out? Right. Why do you have to? I've never understood that.
Why don't you go and evangelize and bring more people into your cult?
Right. Because like, you're going to die anyway. So
why not die with
more? Like, I don't understand the argument's not compelling, but then I have to remind myself that if this was rational, I would be less surprised by this, yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
It would be less tragic if it was rational, maybe.
Yeah. It's true. It's weird.
This is what you have nothing to say.
Weird.
Which is why we should have skipped it. Now we're just depressed.
No, I think it's sad. But it's good to remind everybody that there are people out there who do crazy things.
Right. Well, and this is also reminding me that there is a book on your nightstand entitled 52 Prepper Projects.
Yeah. It's one for every week of the year.
Right. But like, prepping for what?
I don't know. The end of the world.
Right. And so this is...
But not the end of the world. The...
End of society?
The end of society.
Because this is what I think is interesting. Because, like, obviously, like, there's a lot of religious people who end up being preppers, right? Is this also, like, a fear of the end... Like, a fear or, like, the belief in, like, a grand, like, finale, for lack of a better term... Does that not exist in like the secular non-religious communities? They're just like, we will perpetually keep going and keep going.
I have no idea.
So that's one. Two, concerned about your prepper book and what you're prepping for. Three, I will not name any names, but a pretty popular local influencer has been posting videos of her husband who is prepping for something. And I'm loosely connected to this person. I believe she is a believer, except in fact I'm confident she is. I'm dying to know what he is prepping for, and if he's prepping for something, why are you sharing the information? Is all I'm saying. Because that's another thing I think that's funny about preppers, is they always like to keep it a secret. Like, they're trying to, like, it's a very like selfish mentality, at least I'm not calling this person selfish. Just say, like, if you watch like a movie about preppers, it's always like, I'm going to save all these things for me and my family. It just doesn't seem like it is very like loving. And anyway, I digress.
I hear all the points you're making.
Whatever. You have a prep book on your nightstand.
I just need to point out that there is one prepper project for each week of the year. We are in August. Which is 36 weeks into the year, right, something like that. Guess how many of those projects I've completed?
Right, none.
The answer is zero.
Right.
Zero.
But did you purchase this book online, or did you find it at an estate sale?
It was at the bins, okay. Which means it cost 50 cents.
Got it. So you didn't like go out of your way and be like, I really need this book.
No, I got it, and I was like, oh, this sounds exciting.
Perfect.
This is a cool, fun little thing. It's kind of like the... To me, it was a book of like, oh, these are new things I can try and help me like learn stuff. Kind of like right. Kind of like the water heater going out.
Right.
It's one of those things where I'm like,
prepper project.
Oh, do I know how to relight the pilot light on our water heater? Because, you know, that's a basic skill that any homeowner should be able to do. And if you go up there and you can't relight it, that's when you call somebody.
Right.
And that's exactly what we did.
Right.
And there was another, I feel like there's another example of like one of those things that you don't do until you're a homeowner that are just, they're these pretty basic skills that would be nice to at least have experience in, or at least have confidence in being able to figure out. And to me, getting that book was one of those where I'm like, if I had to, would I be able to go start a fire outside to stay warm?
Right. Well, that's what I think is funny is like prepping. Like, well, one, the definition of prepping is like you're preparing for something, right? But the prepper skills is literally just, for the most part, skills that anyone in like the 1700s could do.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like basic things that would be like regular stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus maybe like how to work a ham radio or something.
So I haven't looked through the book, but coming from the Meat Eater podcast, they talk about the mountain men quite a bit. Mountain men being these guys who would come to the U.S.
From where?
Pre-U.S. Well, I guess it was the U.S. at the time. From Europe.
Okay.
And this was very early colonial U.S. They would go out west, be naturally the mountain men.
Right.
And
together or apart?
No, apart.
Oh, got it.
And what they were doing, they were out there trapping and building up this
the beavers
pile of fur,
right,
that they would then go and sell.
Right.
And there were, one of the skills that these mountain men would have,
mm-hmm,
is some of them would be able to make their own gunpowder.
Wow.
Yeah. To me, and it was something that,
that's that, good business.
Yeah, it felt, or it sounded pretty basic in that it was like,
let's not talk about how to make gunpowder on this radio.
Yeah, good point.
It I'm sounded, not going to be indicted.
It sounded like it was relatively straightforward.
Got it.
But, like, nobody knows how to make their own gunpowder.
Right. This is making me think, this is off topic, but it's funny. I had friends in high school who were into that kind of thing, and they counterfeit money.
Yeah, that's
and they, which is a federal crime.
Dumb to do.
And they got the money, like, so they printed their own money, like dollar bills, like they forged it on a home printer in cotton paper.
It's insane.
And one told me about it, which you're telling too many people. And then they were able to pass it off at places around town, and they and use it as currency. So I feel like that's another felony. That's like,
yeah,
that's multiple felonies. These are like juniors in high school, junior seniors in high school, maybe possibly sophomores.
Okay.
They also did weird shenanigans, like make grenades and stuff. Super sweet guys, like super sweet. Wouldn't hurt a fly, but they were getting into some weird stuff that I feel like on paper was like, instantly, I wouldn't be surprised if the FBI had files on them.
Yeah.
Just from all the shenanigans, yeah, that they were doing. Anyway.
The FBI has a
file. None of them are preppers, though, now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Do you know why I know the FBI has a file on me?
Because you had to have
Because I've got TSA pre-check, baby. Ba-boom. Maybe it's the TSA who has a file on me.
I don't think the FBI. I had to meet with the FBI, so they probably have the... For what?
I had to meet for a friend.
What?
For a friend about a job.
Oh, right. We all got that friend.
We can't talk about it.
What is your article? Or what do you want to talk about?
To bring this back up a little bit,
right,
not end on such a downer.
Please.
Did you know there is a new category of dad? Of dad. So we've got dad bods. We've got like...
I can't wait.
We've got like sports dads. We've got like helicopter parents.
Geology dad.
Yeah, geology dads, I guess.
Helicopter parents is the...
That's right. Both parents. Anyway. But so any guesses on what this new category is?
Absolutely no idea.
It is climate dads.
Climate dads?
Yeah.
Who is telling you this information?
This is coming from the UK... The United Kingdom.
What's a climate?
Coming from Bloomberg News. I'd get my phone out to look at it, but I probably already deleted it. Climate dads are dads that are a little bit nerdy, a little bit geeky, but are 100% into
climate change,
climate advocacy, and anti.
Is this just because millennials are getting older?
Maybe. I don't know. I flipped through the email with the abridged version of the article, and it was fascinating to me because it's basically dads who go a little bit over the top, and I related a little bit in the sense that, like, when I was figuring out which new car we were going to get, how I got mildly obsessive over figuring it out, and now...
But what's that do with the climate?
Well, because...
Because we have a hybrid.
Because we have a hybrid.
Got it.
And I was trying to figure out what the best way to...
Save the environment. Got it.
While also having a car.
Right.
And the picture that this article showed was these dads in, like, this meetup group going for a bike ride and then having all of their children also on these bikes that are clearly, like, they're commuter bikes that have built-in stuff for groceries and, like, four seats for your whole group of children. And all these dads were riding these, like, it looked like bicycle tanks that are like they're non-motorized cars,
right.
And the only snippet that I saw was like this one dad was pre-children, he was into all these things, always he was a major supporter of this advocacy group, he would be at all the protests, he would be doing this, doing that. Then when he was having his first child, he had to choose be at home and be at my child's birth or go to COP 15 as a protester.
You are not a climate dad.
He chose his children.
Well, obviously.
Chose his children for like 5-10 years. And now he's finally figured out how he can balance both being a dad and being a climate activist. So, yeah, I'm not a climate dad.
Is that his full-time profession?
I don't know.
He just sounds like a groupie at this point. You are a climate dad, but you luckily have a profession that is a 9-to-5 that keeps you in our kitchen all day.
I'm a cool climate dad.
Yeah, I just a dad who made a lot of really awkward dad jokes today.
I found it really funny that there are now
climate dads
out there.
Only in the UK, though.
Yeah. It also made these comparisons to, like, everybody knows that dad in the neighborhood who's, like, a gear junkie.
Oh,
like,
right.
Loves
right.
working on cars. Right. Or that one who, like, you go over there, all they talk about is sports. Or you go there and he has his, like, thing that he does.
Right.
Here in Texas, I would imagine there's, like, the barbecue dad.
The grill dad, yeah.
The grill dad.
Right.
And now they're adding in this new group of, like, when you go over to the Battier household, all you're going to talk about is climate.
Right. Or if you listen to the Battier We Go podcast.
Yeah.
I almost liken it, which not really, but like for me and my girlfriends, or all the girls are in my social circle, when we all had kids, the majority of them went hardcore, like dietary crunchy. So, like,
diet moms.
Not in the sense of like, I need my kid to be skinny, but like, there need to be zero chemicals in any of my products, any of my food, like, blah, blah, blah. To an extreme, I feel like it got kind of crazy, or it still kind of is crazy. But I feel like the guy version of that is climate dad, like, crunchy mom climate
dad.
Yeah,
kind of.
Anyway.
Yeah. But if anybody out there wants to go to a climate dad meetup, I'm going to start one. It's going to be every Tuesday night at our house, 7:30 p.m. Come on over.
You cannot come, though, if you burn carbon to get here.
Yep. You got to ride a bike on over. We're going to be drinking locally sourced
kombucha
microbrews brewed in the back. It's really, really good.
Using our solar heated water.
Yep, solar heated water. It's a special carbon neutral process that makes the
you'll be fed fried raccoon and possum from our yard.
From the yard.
From the yard.
Yep. Don't worry. The fryer is purely heated by renewable biomass. It we don't have a thermometer, so it kind of goes up and down on temperature. So you might get a piece of raw meat. You might get an over crisp piece of meat. I can guarantee
you could get one with diseases.
I can guarantee you it will never be good.
But it will be clean.
It will be clean for the environment.
Not necessarily for your body. Anyway.
And I digress. Well, with that, I'm done talking.
Let's do it.
Okay. So, but here we're going to go.
Okay, no, bye.
I'm sure everybody's waiting to hear who the sponsor is.
Oh, crap. Okay.
Wait, what were you going to say?
I thought you were going to say everyone's been waiting for this podcast to end, to which I was going to say everyone stopped listening about 30 minutes ago.
No, they've all been waiting for the sponsor of this week's show. Yeah, well, the sponsor of this week's show is all those climate dads out there. Climate dads out there listening to our podcast, trying to get those tips, those tricks to learn how to be more climate conscious friendly. Don't worry, I got something special coming for you. So until next time, but here we're going to go.
Bye.
Bye-bye.